Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening and welcome to our meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources member-led forum. Our program tonight is Giving Thanks, celebrating the 2018 wine harvest with sustainable practices and pairing. And tonight we have Allison Jordan, who's the executive director of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And Allison will be our moderator, which will be really wonderful. Also with us tonight is Jim Collins, Vice President, Coastal Wine Growing and Grower Relations, Ian J. Gallo, Catherine Wald Hall, Vintner Hall Wines, Aaron Lang, Vice President, Viticulture Operations, Lang Twins Family Winery and Vineyards, and coming soon, Steve Lohr, CEO of J. Lohr Vineyards and Wines. And it's my pleasure to turn over to Allison Jordan.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's great to be with you all. And we're especially happy to be here to celebrate the 2018 harvest. It was a really slow and steady growing season, and we expect the wine quality to be excellent. So we're excited about that. I'm the executive director of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance, and we're a nonprofit organization that is really about promoting sustainable wine growing in all aspects of growing those grapes in the vineyard and also making the fantastic California wines that we all love so much. And I'm guessing a few of you are here because you enjoy wine, yes, and especially California wines, which is great. And it's really interesting to note that California is the fourth largest wine growing region in the world, and we are very much committed to this concept of sustainability. So those of you who love wine, you often want to know about the varietal and the vintage and the sources of the grapes from the vineyards and all of this different information. But more and more people want to know how their wine is being made. And so that's one of the things that we're going to talk about today. And a vast majority of California wine is grown and produced using sustainable practices that are environmentally sound, socially equitable, and economically viable. All of those are really important. And we have thousands of vineyards and wineries all across the state that are participating in sustainability programs, getting certified, already being certified, also committed to organic and biodynamic wine grape growing. And most of the California vineyards and wineries are family owned, and many on our panel will be talking a little bit about that generational concept. But managing for the long term really helps ensure that they can pass on a thriving business to future generations. And that's really a concept that is at the heart of sustainability. So this year, the Alliance, which is a partnership between Wine Institute and the California Association of Wine Grape Growers, we are celebrating our 15th year. And to really shine a light on this big milestone, I have some really important people with me on the panel and in the room, our board of directors, and they are vintners and growers, but also have really fascinating pasts. Some of them are generational farmers. Some have been farming for decades. One person was a builder before joining his family winery. Another person was our ambassador to Austria in the past. So really fascinating group of people that bring all of that diverse background to the industry. And their stories are really going to give you a sense of what the California wine industry's leadership means in sustainable wine growing, how they're implementing those practices on a day-to-day basis in their operation. And so without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to them. I'm going to ask each of them to briefly introduce themselves, their winery location, and why they're committed to sustainability. And we'll start with Jim Collins from E&J Gallo.
Start with me. All right. So I am Jim Collins with E&J Gallo Winery. My part of the business is a coastal wine growing and grow relations for Gallo. So we are up and down the coast of California in Napa, Sonoma, Santa Barbara, Monterey, and San Luis Obispo counties. Sustainability is one of those soapbox things for us. The founders of our company, everybody says Gallo, you know, big company. But Gallo is very much a family-owned company, like a lot of the companies up here with me. And the founders of our company, they were truly dedicated to the preserving the environment and sustainability. One of the stories when they were recruiting me to come to Gallo was kind of a funny thing. You go through the all the tough questions about what you can do, and then Ernest Gallo, I was talking to Ernest Gallo, he was interviewing me, and he says, "Well, how's your garden?" And I said, "Well, how's my garden? What the hell does that mean?" He says, "How's your garden?" And so I told him, well, you know, it's doing okay. And what I found out with Ernest, he wanted to see my garden after I got to work. He wanted to make sure that I knew how to grow things. And his idea was sustainability, being able to grow the grow crops, to grow our grapes, and do the right things for the right reasons. It's very important. It permeates everything that we do, from the wildlife habitat that we've restored in our vineyards on the coast to the 50-50 give back, where for every acre that we plant in vineyard, we set aside an acre that we leave in perpetuity in wildlife. It's something that's it's near and dear to the Gallo family, and it's preserving the generations as we go on into the future.
Fantastic. Thank you. And Catherine, I'd love to hear about your winery, but also why you're committed to sustainability.
Hi, my name is Catherine Walt Hall. I love that story about the gallows. That is just so cool when he said, let me see your garden. So we have three wineries. One is called Hall. We make those are our Cabernets, our Bordeaux varietals. All of those grapes come from Napa Valley for Cabernet. We have a Pinot Chardonnay brand called Walt, which is my maiden name. And those grapes come, those come from the coast. We have actually some grapes come down from Oregon, but almost everything else comes from California. We call that 1,000 miles of Pinot because we figure it's 1,000 miles from our most northerly vineyard of Pinot Noir to our most southerly vineyard. And Pinot Noir is a grape that's incredibly responsive to terroir changes. So it's really been a lot of fun for us. And our third wine is called Baca. I didn't have another name, and I'm really into naming things after my family. I want to say, my husband says, my husband says he'd like to have something named after him. And I say, well, Hall is his last name. He got that much. That's it. But we have a third brand that my daughter runs, and it's a Zinfandel brand called Baca, which means berry in Latin. And that's located in Sonoma County. So, and is for me sort of full circle because the first grape, the grape I grew up with was Zinfandel. My dad's vineyard was up in Mendocino County, and we made some great Zinfandel. And I would like to say we were also part of that time when maybe some of you remember when Zinfandel morphed into white Zinfandel. And people may say it's not such great wine, but I can tell you from a grower perspective, it was wonderful to be able to make that. So, I come from a farmer family. I'm a farmer's daughter, proud. I love this industry and we are in it for the very, very long haul. And why we are sustainable, because it's the right thing to do, because we can. As Allison said, so many of our wineries are owned by families. That's really one of the beauties of this industry is when you own your business and when you do it to make money, but you do it for reasons other than making money too, then you can make choices that don't necessarily flow immediately to the bottom line. I'm firmly convinced, by the way, that what we're doing in the vineyards, our sustainable practices, do flow to the bottom line. It's just how you measure over what term. And I'll close just by saying my dad used to say, and I totally believe this, that we never really own any land. I'm blessed to own a lot of acreage across the state, and yet I don't really own it. I'm just sort of the caretaker for as long as I get to have control over it. And my job is to make sure that my daughter has that same commitment. I believe she does. And we'll see how it goes from there.
Great. And Aaron Lang, who is up next, I have been lucky enough to be in this industry now for 15 years, really since the inception of the program. And when I first got on board, his father was on our board of directors. And tomorrow, Aaron's going to be taking the chairmanship of the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. So another baton passed between generations. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about your winery, Aaron.
Sure, thank you. Still a vote, I think, right?
Pardon?
The chairmanship is still a vote. So, I mean, we could get voted down. I could get voted down tomorrow.
You got it.
So we'll see what happens.
We're with you.
Aaron Lang from Lang Twins Family Winery and Vineyards. We're based in the Lodi Appalachian, which is not too far away from here. In fact, if you got into a boat at the Golden Gate Bridge there or somewhere here, and you could get all the way to our vineyards in Lodi, just following the Delta channels heading inland. So we do have a wonderful maritime influence from the Bay Area, even though we're so far inland. And which really enables us to create some really interesting wines and be very diverse in the types of wines that we grow. I'm a fifth-generation farmer, so I was farming in the vineyard when I was old enough to hold a shovel. My dad broke every known child labor law, because I guess they don't apply to your own kids, I guess. But that was really my upbringing. I went to UC Davis, worked in South America for a bit, and came back and now working full-time for Lang Twins Winery. We produce wines that are at our winery, but primarily we see ourselves as growers, and that's our history. And as far as our dedication to sustainable vineyard practices and why we do it, why we exist as a company is for the love of farm and families, period. We do it because we love our families, and I'm talking to the extended families of our community, of our employees, and we love our farm, meaning to kind of key off of what Catherine said is that, we in the spirit of Aldo Leopold, who's probably one of the greatest conservationists, environmentalists in history, we are land stewards. We're stewards of that land for a short period of time, and hopefully my kids can do it. And if I wanted to really make it succinct why we're committed to sustainable practices, it's Julia, my 8-year-old, Declan, my 6-year-old, and Claire, my 3-year-old. That's why.
Oh, that's beautiful. Great. So, Aaron, actually, while you still have the mic, I would love to share what you're seeing from the harvest for 2018. It's funny because usually vintners aren't very, they don't like to talk about the quality quite so early, but I've been hearing from a number of vintners that they think this is going to be just an exceptional year. So maybe you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the valley.
Happy to. Do you want to introduce Steve, or do you want to have him allow him to collect his breath? What do you think?
Let's let him collect his breath, and then we'll have him introduce himself after.
Sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Lohr. So harvest. We started off the growing season really is very much affected by what happens in the wintertime. So we're going to go all the way back to February really quick. In February, what happened in the Lodi area and much of the state is that we had kind of a false spring in February, which got the vines going, and they really wanted to bud burst, but they didn't. And then we got a really sharp cold snap for about a week. Temperatures dropped down to the high 20s, and the vines went, oh, crap, and went back into dormancy. And so what that did was it delayed when the actual bud burst did occur. And that delayed the entire season. So in reality, a typical year, we would finish harvesting on, say, October 15th, October 20th in the Lodi area. This year, we just got finished last week. So that bud break, which occurred later than normal, and we had a very evenly warm spring and summer. We didn't have the huge heat spikes that we had in years prior, which was great. And it just made for a fantastic vintage across the board. I think California in general average to above average crops on many of the Bordeaux varietals. I think overall in the state, we had good yields and the quality was excellent. Berry size was very small in many of our reds, which means really intense color and flavors and phenolics in your wines, which is all a great sign for a very good harvest and a very good vintage for 2018.
And before we turn it over to Steve, Jim, maybe you could talk a little bit about what you saw on the coast in terms of this year's harvest.
Very similar to what Aaron was saying. It's if there was ever a year you say all the conditions lined up right perfectly, it was 2018. 2018 was a great year. We started out early, as Aaron said, and just kind of matured right along through the growing season without really any hiccups. You know, usually we have on the coast, you'll have some heat spikes, but nothing. It was nice growing season. Everything kind of fell into line. You know, it's after the last couple of vintages that were very good, I think 2018 is going to show it's going to be an exceptional vintage also on the coast.
Great. Okay, so Steve Lohr from J. Lohr Vineyards and Wine is with us as well, and he is our current chair for the Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. And it would be great if you could just tell us a little bit about your winery and your commitment to sustainability.
Sure, you bet. Good evening, everyone. Great to have you here. So, J.Lohr Vineyards and Wines. We got started in Monterey County back in 1972. I was about yay high when I helped my dad plant our first 280 acres there. And we're in the town of Greenfield, mid part of the county, Arroyo Seco, Appalachian. Beautiful area for growing cool climate varieties like Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Riesling, Valdiguier. 1984, we came to Napa Valley and have a vineyard there in St. Helena, named after Mom. We call it Carol's Vineyard, Cabernet Sauvignon, and Petit Verdot. And then we're also in Paso Robles, where we started in 1986. And we grow Bordeaux and varietals there. So today we have wineries in Paso, Greenfield, and downtown San Jose, of all places. That's actually where we first started making wine back in 1974.
Great. And can you talk a little bit about your commitment to sustainability, some of the things that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we are all family run companies here, and sustainability is so important, not just for the present, but obviously the future. When we talk about present, we're really talking about making sure our soils stay healthy, that we use less water. We're doing lots of things in our vineyards to try and use less water because that's a precious resource for the entire state, but especially Paso Robles, where aquifers are slowly being depleted. So we're looking at arresting that development by using things like pressure bombs, which tell you how much the vine actually needs, rather than just how much moisture is in the soil. And doing some really interesting things that holistically tell you how much the entire environment needs and how much water might be escaping from your cover crop and how to keep your cover crop healthy, use less water.
Great. And I mentioned in my introduction that the California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance is celebrating our 15th year of outreach and education. But we built on a lot of work that was already going on around the state in places like Lodi, where they had a great viticulture workbook that was the basis of our program. In the Central Coast, they had something called the Positive Point System, which became SIP certified. The Napa had a lot of activities. Sonoma was working on integrated pest management, neighbors and community issues. So there was a whole host of activities already underway. We were able to really bring all of those great resources together into our California Code of Sustainable Wine Growing and have done 15,000 participants attending 500 workshops, just a lot of energy around it. And I would love for maybe, Catherine, you could start to talk a little bit about the benefits or what you've seen in terms of the impact of these types of joint efforts in environmentally sound practices and socially responsible practices.
Yeah, I think we all are learning from each other. It would be sort of the bottom line of the real benefit of these organizations that are out there. But I think the what CSWA and Napa Green and Sonoma has an, its own program now too, that all of this, these organizations create a focus and a dialogue. And it's a forum to share information. We actually have benefited in some very specific ways from the sort of a checklist that comes off of the of our organization, CSWA. But I think above all, the benefit has just been this sort of improved dialogue and encouraging folks in our industry to think more about what they're doing in their vineyards. I mean, we were organic in some of our vineyards many years ago, and all of our vineyards are either organic or sustainable. And we found that we've really grown a lot over the period of time. Sustainability, I think, is a much more sustainable model for many, many reasons. It's actually much better for the environment because it takes into account what you're doing in the vineyard, gives you more tools to work with. And then beyond that, I think encourage you to look at sort of the overall carbon footprint of what you're doing throughout your organization. It's not just the vineyard, although the vineyard is really an important part, but it's also How are you making the wine? How are you selling the wine? How are you packaging it? How are you communicating with your public? And all of those things, I think, contribute to this and support this holistic approach that I think for us has been really beneficial and for the industry as a whole.
Great. And Aaron, would you like to weigh in a little bit? You, I know your family's been active with Lodi, the sustainability program, and Lodi Rules really since the beginning and in many years. So it would be great to hear about your take.
It's a really great question. And the way I would like to answer it is that from a consumer's perspective and also from a grower perspective, okay? So from a grower perspective, what it really does is that these codes, these workbooks, like the Lodi Wine Growers Workbook, the Lodi Rules Certification Program, over 100 and some standards which address issues like pest management, water management, soil, human resources, operational, energy, all these are actual practices which we need to go and look at and rate ourselves against. So for us as growers, it's like a self-assessment tool. So we look at that and say that we all are farmers and we're on a different level of this continuum of sustainability, okay? Imagine that, you know, being a brand new farmer, not knowing what the heck to do out there, and all the way down here where you're, you know, a very experienced sustainable farmer who's using the best practices possible out there to really try to conserve resources and lessen inputs and improve quality and all that. So everyone's is somewhere in the middle, right? We all come in this at a different spot. And so what these workbooks do, they allow you to self-assess where I am at on how I'm handling my water management or pest management, or where am I at in my human resources book, and where do I lie, and where can I go? And so it's a roadmap for people that they don't pull you aside in college and teach you how to do this. This is something that we, these organizations like CSWA, Lodi Rules, SIP Certified, we are providing this roadmap for everyone to self-assess, evaluate where they're at, and then say, what can I do to improve? And then these are all improvements that have been created by and vetted by environmentalists, by academics, by growers, by winemakers. So it all makes a lot of sense. And many of these are certified by some of the best eco-labelers around, like Protected Harvest, an example of Lodi Rules. So for us, it's a way to give us a roadmap of where we're at and where we can go to do better. And as farmers, we're always trying to strive on what can we do better. And we're all going to reach that different level of sustainability, but the job's never done. We never complete it. We're always trying to get better. And I think these programs provide that roadmap for growers. As far from a consumer perspective and why it's such so beneficial is that the consumers, when you pick up a bottle of wine that has a Lodi Rule seal on the back or a SIP certified seal or CSWA, you know that you are buying something that it values the same things that you yourself value, right? That you know that they followed a code, a workbook, by which that they were farming and then audited to make sure that it's done. So really all that seal is communicating our efforts in the vineyard with credibility. That's all it is. It's completely a communication and marketing effort. That's it. Otherwise we would follow our own code and away we go. For us to participate in a certification program, it's all about just how can I communicate to you and you with credibility that I am actually following these practices and doing the right thing like I say I am. Because there's no other reason for me to get certified. Because frankly, I've got growers in Lodi who are a lot better growers than me, who do really some very interesting things, and they're not certified organic, sustainable, biodynamic, anything. They just do their thing, and they're great, and they should be applauded for it. But the reason why we're choosing to be certified is so we can try to communicate that with some level of credibility in the marketplace. And not that we're any better farmers or worse than the guy next door. But it's just that we've chosen this route as a method to reach our consumers and tell our story about farmers. I think for so long, farmers put their head down and they work, and that's it. And they don't think that being out there in the public eye and talking about our issues to the public was a priority for us. And I think that it needs to be a new priority for farmers because most of us here in San, you ask 100 people in San Francisco and they say, where's your food come from? And you'll probably get a lot of people raise their hand and say Safeway. Well, no, it comes from the ground. And I think that's lost upon many people in today's modern day society.
That's great. You brought up so many great points.
That's why he's a chairman.
Exactly. There you go.
Not yet.
I mean, continuous improvement is so central to what we do. And there was a really purposeful intention to make sure that we're doing things that buoy the entire industry. We don't want to create this bar that only a few can subscribe to. We want this to be something that everyone can get involved with and be lifted. And at the same time, with certification, you have to have this line that has stringent enough standards that it meets meets the muster in the marketplace, but that you can then credibly communicate to consumers, to your buyers, whether they're trade or all of you who are going to enjoy wine in just a little bit. So, and Steve, I'd love to hear your take on the benefits that you've seen. You've been involved for ages as well.
Yeah. Okay. So as far as Aaron said, we can all do this on our own. It's just that having these programs, and in particular, you know, we really like CSWA, it gives a tremendous roadmap. I mean, back when we were really more working out of workbooks than online, this workbook is that thick. And we actually have a group of 16 of us at both our vineyards and winery that get together and discuss from time to time just what we are doing to make ourselves more sustainable along the lines of the CSWA. But as you go through the workbook and do the work, you know, quite frankly, you are spending just that much extra focus and time on your winemaking activities and your grape growing activities. Whether or not you do everything in the workbook, and we all ascribe to that, you're looking at other things as well. So what's fun is you learn so much in school and you internalize all that, but yes, this process really helps you to think even more deeply about what you're doing. So whether you're certified or not, you know, that's not a real big deal. It just depends upon what you're doing. We chose to get certified much for the same reasons that Aaron and his family did. And that is to be able to show others that, yes, we are walking the walk. It's not just us self-assessing. It is a third party coming in and doing it. And more gatekeepers, the folks who buy the wine out there, whether it's a restaurateur or a distributor, a retailer, they want to be able to say to their consumers, yes, these folks are doing the right thing. And you've probably all seen on menus around the country that you'll have a sustainable section or maybe a little dot or a little leaf that notifies that you're sustainable or organic or biodynamic. It makes a big difference. And we think more and more people are looking for that extra little edge because you do want to support folks that are doing the right thing. If you go to the Nordic countries, you don't even get a chance to get into many of their markets. I'm talking Finland, Sweden, Norway, unless you've gone through these various processes. You're actually at a disadvantage. I don't know if we'll actually ever come to a disadvantage here, but I think people will vote with their pocketbooks. So it's the right thing, and definitely after you spend some good time doing it, you are helping your bottom line too. So it makes good economic sense, which, remember, that's one of the three E's of sustainability, economics.
So anything you'd like to add, Jim?
No, I mean, these guys...
They covered it.
They covered it. I think the one aspect that we overlook is it is the third-party validation, the roadmap. Those are all really key. But one of the things that we overlook is by being sustainable, biodynamic, or organic, whatever, you're improving the quality of your wines. Because what this does, and Aaron said it, and Catherine said it also, it forces you to pay attention to what you're doing. And everything that you do, you know, there's a cause and effect. So everything you do, there's something that happens. There's an impact. And through this process, you're evaluating that impact and you're trying to make it a positive impact. And if it's a negative, you're trying to mitigate it. You're trying to figure a way around it. And what we've seen, we've been at this for years and years, is when you do this, the quality of your wine goes up. It's just because people are paying attention to what they should be paying attention to.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
That's a great point. And for all of you, quality is what really matters. So I would love to hear any other examples any of you would like to offer about how sustainable practices can actually enhance quality. And I usually think it's about specific practices rather than the overall point of view. But I'd love to hear some specific practices and how you think that actually improves quality.
So I may say the answer you don't want to hear.
But following a code of sustainable wine growing, whatever program you subscribe to, will absolutely make you a better farmer, hands down. And you will absolutely be more involved and more attuned to your vineyard because you're forcing yourself. It's got teeth in these programs that make you force you to do these, where when you're not participating in a program like that, sometimes the expediency of time takes over and you decide to ignore one thing or the other. So I think it makes you a better farmer, absolutely. And that will absolutely make a better wine every time. However, I will say, and again, that just because they're not sustainably certified or choose to use that program to communicate doesn't mean it's a lesser quality wine. There are plenty of farmers out there who make some amazing wines, who do their own practices and their own thing, which could be as sustainable or more than the practices we use. So I think it's an important distinction that we say that these programs are great as communication tools. They're great for roadmaps to have farmers use better practices, but it's certainly not the end-all be-all. It's what we've chosen to do and what we as a statewide organization have chosen to do because we're trying to provide this roadmap to get other people on board with these practices, which we think are for the betterment of all wine grape growing, the quality and the sustainability of what we do. So do I think my wines are better because I participate in these programs? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say something more about the consumer. I mean, I agree with everything that Steve, you were saying, and I would add this. I think the wine consumer is such a happy addition to this equation of the increased interest in sustainability. All of you here, when you go to buy a wine, my guess is you want to know the story behind the wine. People want to know a story, and that's whether you are selling wine at a tasting room, whether we're selling a wine at a tasting room, or a sommelier is in a restaurant. Somms tell me all the time how they want to know the story about the wine. What is, who are you, these people that are making the wine? I think you were saying that, Aaron, too, before. But what's happening is this wonderful symbiosis, I think, between what the consumer wants and what we want to do in terms of being responsible in the way we're making wine. And the millennial generation, which is, I'm a boomer, so I grew up in this era where everybody tried to please the boomers, but now this torch has passed, everybody wants to please the millennials, and what, and yeah, that those are my kids, yes, I would go with that. Yeah, the millennial generation wants to buy products from people they admire, who are doing good work, who are responsible and responsible to the environment, responsible to the community. And that is such a healthy, positive change in our society, I think, is in general. And it certainly has had a positive influence on those of us within our industry.
Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California with Allison Jordan, Executive Director, California Sustainable Wine Grower Alliance, who is our moderator tonight. Thank you so much, Allison. And we have with us Jim Collins, Vice President, Coastal Wine Growing and Grower Relations, ENJ Gallo, Catherine Wald-Hall, Vintner, Hall Wines, Aaron Lang, Vice President, Venticulture Operations, Lang Twins. Are there really twins in the family?
Yeah, my dad.
Oh, they really are. That's amazing. Yep. So the Lang Twins, Family Winery and Vineyards, and Steve Lohr, CEO, Jay Lohr, Vineyards and Wines. And back to you, Allison.
Thank you, Anne. And I actually just wanted to mention, for those of you whose interest has been piqued about certification, we now have 70% of all of California wine is being made in a certified sustainable winery. About 25% of our acreage is certified sustainable to our program. And if you count all the other programs like Lodi Rolls, SIP Certified, and Napa Green, it's 40% of all of California's wine grape acreage. So really exciting. And that's also not counting the organic and biodynamic producers. So there really is a true commitment. And you can, and again, because we're really focusing on getting the entire industry to adopt these practices, you can feel good about drinking California wine. So the other thing that I think sustainability does is it really has this drive towards innovation. So there's this idea of continuous improvement. And so you can focus on a lot of low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of it. It grows back. But there's also some really interesting high-tech things going on. So I just wanted to start with Jim, and maybe you could talk a little bit about this project that you've been using, the Watson.
The Watson. Well, I mean, Steve hit it there. He was talking about the water use. Water is such a precious resource for us, for all the state, for everybody who lives in the state. So as farmers, our use of water, we need to be very, very conscious of how we use water. One of the things that we've done, we started a partnership with IBM, and you probably saw the commercial with Watson. You know, and we started, how can we really improve how we irrigate? And as Steve said, one of the keys is irrigate what the vine needs. But when you're talking about a lot of vines per acre, you know, over 1,000 vines per acre, how do you get it down to the level that you're getting the vine exactly what it needs, each individual? Because you imagine, you've driven through the vineyards, you've seen the drip hoses out there in a lot of vineyards. And how do we get, you know, I'm a vine, I need a certain amount of water. You're another vine. You may not need as much water as me. You know, so how do we do that? So one of the things we worked with IBM is developing a system where we have remote sensing, where we are actually getting what each individual vine needs, which got wine on my mind. I mean, what each individual vine needs, and have the ability to regulate our irrigation system to irrigate by the vine. Or right now, we haven't got it down to the by the vine just yet, but we're getting the area smaller and smaller. So we can do this with remote sensing of the vine needs and turn our irrigation on and off in these areas. So eventually, we're going to do it vine by vine. Vine by vine over a large areas. And then you really, what you start doing is you're using less water, but it goes back to kind of, you know, my mantra on it is we're going to improve quality. Because the vines will be getting just the water they need, not too much. They won't be getting vegetative, so you'll be getting the flavors that you want in your wine. So we work with IBM. We're working with NetFM. And all this stuff is really cool. You wish it could come faster. But it is really, we're developing it as we go right now. So it's a fun project to do. Probably see some more TV commercials coming up about it.
Anyone else want to talk about any examples you have of low-tech or high-tech solutions?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll speak to that. And I just want to applaud Jim and Gallup for what they're doing there, because one of the things we all face is when we have vineyards, we get viruses occasionally, and you have to pull a vine. And if it's just, a few vines there, or maybe 5 or 10% of the vineyard, well, you pull the vine, but then you plant the new vine, and we all have these drip systems. And if they're all giving the same amount of water, or you're in a period where you're stressing the vine, where you don't water for 2 months for the mature vines, that's really tough on that little baby vine that's just really trying to start. So that's fantastic, Jim, that you guys are doing that. Because what does that mean from a sustainability perspective? It means that you're not having to pull out an entire vineyard and therefore use more steel for posts. Obviously, have to plant new vines, put in new trellises. So that's fantastic. For what we're doing here, surface renewal is the name for it. And it's taking a look at that holistic environment, where how much water is escaping from the vines by measuring the moisture of the air eddies as they flow through the vineyard. Also, how much is coming out of the cover crop, how much might be coming out of the soil right beneath the vines. As we take a look at what all of that is, we know to not give any more water to not just the vines, but the environment than it actually needs. And that saves us typically about another 20-25% on our annual irrigation, which in a state that faces drought as often as we do, that makes a difference.
And certainly water management is another one that's so closely linked to quality. So important to be precise. Aaron, anything else you'd like to add?
Sure. If you're going to ask me to talk, I'll talk. I think the best thing you can put in a vineyard, low tech or high tech, are your footprints, period. That's the best thing you can do. That's how I was raised. That's what my dad taught me. There is no as cheap as sensors are getting and as cool as technology is getting. I will hire a new vineyard manager who is has a good pair of dirty work boots over a guy who's got a fancy iPad any day of the week because I think that's where we get into windshield farming. You guys know what windshield farming is? It's when you farm from your windshield at 55 miles an hour as you blow by the vineyard on your way to the coffee shop, and that's what we don't do. But I think one of the most exciting areas of viticulture right now is in spatial analysis, meaning GIS systems. So we all know Google Maps. It's just another GIS system. You can put layers of different things on there. Give me the restaurant layer. Give me the hotel layer. Give me the whatever layer. We do the same thing in the vineyard. And what we've been very busy with over the last long time is establishing those layers in the vineyard. So we have really good soil maps, and then we can have on top of that we take multispectral images of our vineyards using fixed winged aircraft or drones, UAVs, to look at what does the biomass of the vineyard look like right now in this instant. What does the thermal look like? What do the change of the vigor or the biomass from 1 week to the next look like? And then we can overlay on top of that with multiple years of data, what do our harvests look like? So when we harvest our vineyards, we can actually collect the data of how many pounds per vine are coming off in these areas. And what that all that data enables us to do, if we are good enough to analyze it and then apply it in the vineyard, is allow us to do what we've all been talking about here, which is precision agriculture, which is using a the same amount of inputs or less to do more. Meaning, I'm going to use the same amount of fertilizer, perhaps, or maybe a little less, but I'm going to give this vine who needs a little bit more, less than or more than that vine. And so when we're out there, we're going to have variable rate fertilizer units, variable rate irrigation, variable rate everything, depending upon these spatial maps that we are, all this data that we are collecting. And so that's a huge partnership between technology, which is here in San Francisco, is a huge hub for tech, and farmers in the field, which is going to help us reduce the amount of resources we use to make the same product, your wines, that much better. Yes, honey, yes, yes, yes. He will have that in his hand, but I will absolutely say that technology is a tool. It is not a crutch. And so we need to use technology in order to make our decisions that much smarter in the vineyard. But ultimately, growing wine grapes and working with a vine, which is not a widget in a factory, it is a living, breathing organism, which is affected by the environment and everything else. And I'm sorry, right now, Watson can win Jeopardy, right, but he's not going to make the highest quality wine that some experienced winemakers and grape growers can do in this state.
He hasn't done it yet.
He hasn't done it yet.
Well, I interrupted you here.
No.
I think that's one of the cool things about what we do, the wine growing, and we're talking about all this technology and information. We're gathering all this data, you're getting it, you're helping make decisions, but it all comes down to a gut decision that somebody's got to make.
Yeah, I love that. I love to talk about how when we've got all these ways of measuring the grapes and when are they going to be ready for harvest and what do you do, and at the end of the day, we decide, I'll bet you all do too, when we're going to pick based on our head of winemaking and our head of viticulture walk down the aisles and they take out the grapes and they put it in their mouth and they feel how the skin is, how thick it is, how crunchy the seed is, the tastes. It's all these things that thankfully no machine really can quantify. So it's very, it comes back to the person. I want to say just a couple, maybe one low tech thing.
Right?
Yeah. Because it's high tech, but then there's some just plain old fashioned low tech stuff. So we've been doing this project with Humboldt State since 2015 with owls and trying for rodent control in vineyards. We were actually working with owls before, but then Humboldt State had this program that they started in 2015, and it's really been fun. And because it's this vehicle of sharing information, we're learning that, you know, where to orient the little home where the owls stay. And we know that owls don't keep a very clean house, so we have to clean it out for them. They're going to stay. And then and we know better how high we put it or how low we put it and what the aspect is to the sun and what kind of traffic they want in front of them and all these things. It's just been really a hoot. And oh my God, that was really good. I didn't plan that. Yeah. Okay. But it's been, we're learning and we're getting better, and that's just about as basic as you can get.
It's such a great example. We were talking a lot about environmental issues, but sustainability is also about those social aspects and the broader community and your neighbors and employees and all of it. So I would love to hear you talk now a little bit about whether it's a philanthropic effort you have or something that you've done with your employees that is all a part of your sustainability commitment.
Yeah, for us, I mean, you think about employees, the folks that do the workforce out in the vineyards. A lot of times that's overlooked as part of sustainability. And I'll keep going back to quality. One of the things, if you want to really improve quality, we found, and we've instituted some educational viticultural education with our workers, is tell them why they're doing things. You know, I come from a background. I was in the military before, and there's the old mantra there. You know, you always get told. You know, told four or five times. Sometimes somebody likes to tell you, but why you're doing things. And so explain to workers, giving workers the tools and the education to understand what we're doing in the vineyards. They know why we're pruning. They know why we're leafing. It's been a big effort for us is training our employees and onto the why. The why we're asking you to do this. Not only just the how, but the why. And I tell you, they, out in the field, the folks know a hell of a lot more than any of us do. And what we've seen is by giving this training to people, they're coming to us with some really, really cool ideas. I mean, we use falcons now to control birds in some areas. And that was some folks out there that were, you know, they came up with that idea. They said, hey, let's try this. We're trying stuff. So for us, training our employees, investing money and educating our employees is something that's really driving some huge dividends for us.
Great. And we'll just go down the line. Catherine, do you want to tell us about one of your efforts beyond the Humboldt County example? That was a great one. Partnerships are so critical to everything that we do.
We try to encourage all of our team to be involved in the community. I think being responsible in your business, in your vineyard, in your practices as a vintner, as a winery, those are all important. But the overall message is, I think, to make sure that everybody on your team not only is informed, which is really key about why they're doing it, but feels that they are supported in their own interests. So we have a variety of community programs that we encourage our team to get involved in. One of the ones I love the most is we match, we let people off for 2 weeks a year to paid, but to work in any community organization they want to work in. And we match their contributions financial to any organizations they give money to up to a certain amount. But that amount is high enough that we haven't had an issue where people, so that seems that's working. But I think, you know, we want to be responsible. We want a message to the consumer. And I think equally important and perhaps even more important is messaging to our own team who we are and what we expect of them and what we want to do to support them.
Great example. And Steve, I know you guys do some philanthropy even with some of your wine brands so that consumers are not only enjoying your wines but also giving back. Want to talk a little bit about that example?
Oh, sure. Happy to, Allison. Yeah, so we have, I mentioned earlier, our Carol's Vineyard named after Mom. That's our vineyard in St. Helena. And unfortunately, we lost Mom to breast cancer in 2008. And so we thought, well, what can we do, you know, to help other women not go the same route that Mom did? And so what we do is we take $3 from every bottle of Carol's Cab that we sell, and we donate it to the National Breast Cancer Foundation to help women who otherwise might not be able to afford to get mammograms, get them. So over the course of the 9 years we've been helping the NBCF, we've helped 6,500 women in need around the country get free mammograms. And then we also do things like patient navigation services. So if you or any of your friends have gotten that diagnosis of breast cancer, you know, it's alarming. And what do you do? Where do you go? Well, Patient Navigation Services helps you through that whole route. It almost holds your hand and helps these women get the services they need, get the therapy they may need. And then we also help these hope kits, put together these hope kits where it's a bunch of goodies, you know, from nice warm socks to bath salts and scarves and everything to help you deal with the whole process. And again, a woman will get this, you know, oftentimes not even knowing, and all of a sudden this nice gift pack comes and it kind of just makes a little difference, you know, to help through that diagnosis.
We've come to that time in our program when we have questions. The first one that I have with me is, what is the GOLD expectations timetable for total sustainability throughout California? So, Allison, I'll get you to check with our panel here and what their opinions are.
So our goal, as I mentioned earlier, is really just to have people adopt practices, to have the tools and resources they need to spur that peer-to-peer exchange of information. And we're really excited about just the broad adoption and wide participation of the entire industry in those efforts. And then we have the certification option, and I mentioned some of those numbers, which were really impressive in my mind, but they're purely voluntary. So we don't necessarily have a goal of having the entire industry be certified. But that being said, there are some regions around the state that are setting goals like that. So in Sonoma, they have 100% goal. In Napa, they have 100% goal for Napa Green. So there are those efforts underway, but we really see our viewpoint as, you know, really being about supporting wine grape growers and vintners in this exploration of how they can be doing even better. And any chair or future chair want to speak to that?
I would only add to the fact that sustainable vineyard practices, sustainability in general, is a moving target. As far as that, we created these workbooks, these protocols, these self-assessment tools, these roadmaps, but these are all living documents that need to be updated very often, so we can update it with the latest technologies, the latest best management practices for XYZ practice in the vineyard. And so that is the reason why our organization, the Wine Institute and COG, and also CSWA, our joint organization, exists, so we can maintain this document, continue to push the envelope on what can we do better. And I think that we will never reach that complete sustainability goal, but we're on that pathway and pushing the envelope every day.
Yeah, they would say in sustainability, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, because part of it is all of this ongoing exploration, improvement of best practices, and sharing information.
Another question is, what are the serious challenges now that we face, and farmers, as all of us and are involved, face, and that is the things that are happening now in California in terms of the drought, the fires, and the problems that we're having.
We farmers face a lot of challenges out there in California. But the biggest one I think that we face can be communicated with the story. We do habitat restoration work, and we invite high school kids to come out to participate in this program through the Center for Land-Based Learning. We have a field trip 3 times a year with the same class. They come out, they learn how to what a native California riparian plant is and where to plant it, how to do it, how to put the drip hose in, plant that plant, get their hands dirty, right? During lunch, we had turkey sandwiches for the kids, and we live right on the Mokelumne River. Mokelumne River is what provides water for the East Bay Mud for Oakland, right? So right there, good. We were making our sandwiches, and there was some miner lettuce, which is a native plant that grows here in California, especially near rivers and streams. And it's called miner's lettuce because the 49ers, when they were searching for gold, not the football team, would use it for vitamin E and the vitamins that come with basically a natural lettuce crop. So we had it was a guy from USDA who washed it, put it in a sandwich, and ate it. And the kid, a high school kid, you know, 16, 17 years old, looked at him and says, "Ew, you can't eat that. It came from the ground." And you go, what? Where do you think food comes from? And I think the biggest threat that we have in California agriculture is a lack of education and understanding of where food comes from. And that includes luxury items like wine, because in 2 short years, that young man is going to be voting. He's going to be voting on critical measures which control what farmers are allowed to do or not to do, control how our soil is, you know, water regulations, whether we're going to decide to, you know, have more water storage in dams or not in dams, or, you know, or have whatever it may be. All these very critical issues in regulation on California farmers, the folks who provide the food and fiber for our state and many, many places around the world. I think, yes, we have drought. Yes, we have pests which come from other countries. Yes, we have you know, fires, we have issues, we have climate change, we have all of these very physical challenges. I think the number one challenge we have is education of our voting, for those people who are voting, our legislatures, our legislator who are making rules and laws who have never been on the farm. I think it's critically important that we get people back to the land to understand what it takes to put food on the table, so they can be more, they can have an educated and informed decision when they fill in that bubble on their ballots.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, paraphrasing Winston Churchill, you know, the as a society gets further and further away from their agrarian roots, it becomes just critical that people understand where food comes from and what it takes to do that. So that's what we face.
We've reached that point in our program for our last question. And it comes back to, I think, many of the comments that we've made tonight and heard. The question was, can you talk about how sustainability includes the workers and how do sustainable vineyards promote workers' interests?
So I'm happy to take that one.
And that's Steve.
Yep. So certainly, when you think about sustainability, you think probably environment first, right? And that means using fewer or no chemicals for pesticides, maybe even herbicides. We've all heard about the lawsuits, you know, that have gone on with certain chemicals being used by groundskeepers elsewhere, and those run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, obviously, you don't want to have to deal with that, and more importantly, you want your workers to stay healthy. So by subscribing to a sustainable program where you're looking at maybe using beneficial insects to work with those pests, or you're putting in insectaries, little gardens, pollinator habitats we have down in Paso Robles to help those beneficial insects eat those bad pests. Those all help our workers because they're not having to use chemicals. We issue petroleum-based fertilizers, try and use compost whenever possible. We make thousands of tons of our own compost each year so that we're not having to use fossil fuel-based fertilizers. And also just, I think the whole idea of education is very well said there, Aaron. And sharing that with our folks, you know, why do you do this particular process? What does it mean for the overall health of our vineyard or the winery or society as a whole? And quite frankly, people want to do the right thing. It's not just consumers that want to do that. Our own workforce really takes pride in doing that. And if they get that pride from doing a job well done, knowing they're helping the overall community, yeah, it's better for everyone.
As I mentioned before, this is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is Giving Thanks, Celebrating the 2018 Wine Harvest and Sustainable Practices and Bearings. And we've had a wonderful panel tonight, and I really appreciate the comments and the observations that they shared with us. Our moderator was Allison Jordan, Executive Director, California Sustainable Wine Growing Alliance. Jim Collins is Vice President, Coastal Wine Growing and Grower and Relations, E&J Jallo. Catherine Hall, Venter Hall Wines. Aaron Lang, Vice President, Viticulture Operations, Lang Twins Family Winery and Vineyards. And you just heard from Steve Lohr, CEO, J. Lohr Vineyards and Wines. First of all, let's give a big thank you to our panel who've been excellent tonight. And now thank you for joining us at the Commonwealth Club. Thank you for being such a wonderful audience. This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned, and we are adjourned to do wine tasting now. So thank you for being with us.